This is David Duke. This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world news and information of importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may dwell upon the earth. Good to be with you, ladies and gentlemen. We have a lot to talk about. We have a lot of posts, and we want to deal with some of those posts today. And any other questions you might want to bring up on this program, you're certainly welcome to do so. And remember that Town Hall is on stormfront.org, and you're welcome to post on that site, on that thread, and your posts will be read by many people. We've had well over 500,000 views already on our thread, and I'm certain that we're going to have a lot more in the days and months and years ahead. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'll tell you what we'll do. We've got so many posts, and I want to be able to get to them today. Let's see if I can do that. Let's go ahead and start with some of the posts and some of the questions, and then we'll go forward. The first thing I notice on Stormfront is a post that was done yesterday. I have not commented about it yet. It was done after my program, and sometimes I go back and try to reach the posts that were done from people listening to the archive shows. And there's a very good quote that Northern Bastion has put on, which is a powerful quote by a person I call a friend and a person that I think has done incredibly fantastic intellectual work. He's probably written the most intellectual three-part series on the nature of the Jewish question and the Jewish supremacist problem than any man, I think, has ever written. I don't know if it's for mass circulation. A lot of people are not going to be able to get through it. It's not light reading. I made Jewish supremacism so that a high school student could read it, but perhaps a college professor would still enjoy it. This is truly on the level of a college graduate or someone who has a lot of experience in some of the academic discipline he talks about. But still, for those of you who are more intellectual and those of you who read a lot into the scientific area, there is no better source on the Jewish question itself than Dr. Kevin MacDonald's works. He's just done a fantastic job, and there's a quotation. He has three main books, and starting from the theme of a people, you know, that shall dwell apart. And let me give you a quote which Northern Bastion drew from some of Kevin MacDonald's works. He also has some articles which we have on our website, davidduke.com, discussing the Jewish role of the neocon movement and how neocon political movement in America and around the world is essentially a Jewish movement for Jewish objectives. It's a Jewish tribal movement for what they see to be the objectives of the Jewish people. For instance, it's very, very pro-Israel, which has very strong immigration laws, and they want to continue the demographic strength of Israel. But at the same time, this group of Jewish intellectuals, Jewish supremacists really, want to destroy the racial patterns of both America and Europe. They consistently have transformed the conservative political perspective in America from one of closed borders, protecting our borders and the integrity of our country, to one of open borders, which is transforming our nation rapidly into much like a third world country. We see that change happening on our streets every day. We see parts of not just Los Angeles, but parts of Arkansas that seem to look more like Mexico than traditional America, complete with the trash, the problems. It's just amazing the transformation that's taking place. And these men, these Jewish supremacists, are the source of this problem. Anyway, the quote that Northern Bastion gives us about this issue, and this is a wonderful quote, and I would like to repeat this quote again and again, and I hope a lot of our people will take this, and they'll take this quote and repeat it again and again. Quote, This is from Dr. Kevin McDonald, a professor out in California at a major university. The present Judaized cultural imperium in the West is maintained by a pervasive thought control propagated by the mass media and extending to self-censorship by academics, politicians, and others well aware of the dire personal and professional consequences of crossing the boundaries of acceptable thought and speech about Jews and Jewish issues. It is maintained by zealously promulgated, self-serving, and essentially false theories of the nature and history of Judaism and the nature and causes of anti-Semitism. Now, I want to repeat this because I hope that this sinks in to the awareness, the consciousness of every listener to this program. Let's go at it one more time. It's because it's a long sentence, and it's typical of McDonald. He challenges you intellectually. I mean, most people write in short sentences. It's easily understood. He writes for intellectuals, and he writes intellectually, and that's what we have here. Let me read it again, and let's let it sink in for a minute. The present Judaized cultural imperium in the West is maintained by a pervasive thought control propagated by the mass media and extending to self-censorship by academics, politicians, and others aware of the dire personal and professional consequences of crossing the boundaries of acceptable thought and speech about Jews and Jewish issues. It is maintained by zealously promulgated, self-serving, and essentially false theories of the nature and history of Judaism and the nature and causes of anti-Semitism. Dr. McDonald says and teaches very pervasively in his books that Judaism and the Jewish people are an evolutionary response. That is, it's an evolutionary strategy of the Jewish people for survival. And you find different evolutionary strategies among, of course, different entities, different groups, different breeds of life all through nature. And he shows how that what's happened is that the Jewish and the Jewish supremacist, really, ideology is one that's not only been born, it's also been imbued. In other words, it's let's put it this way. Let's reverse that. It's been not only taught, but now it's basically inborn, because the Jewish structure, the Jewish community structure, is one that favors the propagation of certain Jewish genes that in turn propagate the Jewish character. Now, that may sound very wild to a lot of people, but there's been tremendous research recently showing how that our personalities in many ways, even our political views, have a lot to do with our genetics and not simply our upbringing. They've done tests, for instance, they've done studies of adopted children and how adopted children whose parents are, say, conservative, whose biological parents are conservative, and whose adopted parents are, say, liberals, the adopted children with conservative parents tend to be more conservative. That's just the way it is. Now, that would go completely counter to all the environmental theories. There's also a tremendous amount of data. I talk about this extensively in My Awakening. And that's how I tie everything in. People ask me what the difference is between My Awakening and Jewish supremacism. My Awakening deals with the whole issue. It deals with the whole race issue, the genetics issue, as well as the political ramifications of those genetics. It starts off showing how that indeed there are intrinsic differences between mankind. These are not differences we should be afraid of or differences we think are terrible. These are differences that we should recognize and deal with, not to oppress people, but to allow every people to have their own culture, their own heritage, to develop their own value system and preserve those unique and wonderful expressions of humanity on the planet. And of course, we must have our own expression of humanity, the white race. We must have that preserved as well on this planet, and we demand that for ourselves and our children. We believe deep in our souls that this is one of the most basic rights that we have as human beings, to live in a society that reflects the values of our forefathers, of the people that came before us, and to make sure that we bequeath a society to our children and grandchildren that has a resemblance, that has a value system that is that life we followed, and not some sort of alien system. Not living. We don't want our children, to make it very simple in basic terms, we don't want our children to grow up as strangers, you know, in their own land, in their own country. And of course, that's what is happening right now. I'm telling you, there's many schools right now that the white kids feel like they're strangers. Gangster rap is the dominant culture. These people act very differently, or they're white children in some of these massively. This is happening in many places in the United States, even in rural southern areas, rural Midwest areas, where some of the local school systems are majority Mexican, where Mexican or Spanish is the major language being taught, is the major language used. And the traditional American child feels totally alienated. You know, and it's just a tragedy that we're having this occur, and we think that it's got to be stopped. But getting back to the issue, McDonald shows, you know, how that, you know, the personalities of people are reflected to a great extent in the heredity, and that the Jewish evolutionary response, what Judaism is, if you want me to try to give you a basic explanation for those new people who are beginning to learn it, and the best way for you to get this understanding, I think, is to read My Awakening and also read Jewish Supremacism, because there's much of that in those particular books on this subject. But the Jewish religion and the Jewish supremacist ideology is basically a response to preserving their people and advancing their people while being a minority in a host civilization. Let's put it this way. As you know, the Jews were dispersed in the Middle East, but of course they were already very, very racial in their orientation long before that dispersal by the Romans and others. They ended up going to many different lands, Greece, Rome, you know, Iberia, we can just talk Morocco, all over the world. And in these societies, in these cultures, in these civilizations, they were a tiny minority. Now, how does that minority, how does that existence of a people preserve itself when they're a tiny minority in an overwhelmingly non-Jewish environment, non-Jewish culture, non-Jewish politics, non-Jewish art, non-Jewish literature, non-Jewish everything? And their response has been Judaism. Now, every other people that has, you know, merged in and been transported, whether by the ancient slavery that existed in the Roman Empire and the other empires of the world, whether it had been by simply trade or people rising in an empire and then moving to another area, every other people has been absorbed by the populations where they live. The Jewish population has not been absorbed. How did they do it? Well, that's not a very difficult question to answer. They did it basically by two means. One is they preached to their children a absolute love of their own people, a celebration of their people. And at the same time, they preached an intense dislike, anger, even hatred toward the Gentiles which surrounded them. In other words, for instance, all the Jewish holidays are about Jewish victories against Gentiles who terribly tried to oppress them and murder them. So the young Jewish child through his entire life is taught, from the time that they're a child to the time they're adult and beyond, they're taught about how the evil Gentiles murdered them and enslaved them and beat them and dispersed them and crucified them, etc., etc. And it's still going on today. We have that in the Holocaust education, which is not only to destroy any sort of consciousness that we have, any sort of group solidarity we have against these Jewish supremacists in the West, but it's to also make them more concerned about Jewish issues and Jewish values. So at one point they talk about, you know, the Jewish people, the chosen of God. It's a self-love, and at the same time it's a hatred. In fact, I think that Judaism is based far more on hatred of other people than even self-love. I don't know if they do love themselves that much, but the overwhelming philosophy of Judaism has just been utter hatred toward the Gentile community. And that's reflected in their Talmud. It's reflected in so many different aspects of their literature, of their way of life, of their chronicles. And that's how they do it. Secondly, the way they did it was by segregating themselves from the Gentile population as much as possible. They created their own schools, which is in many ways admirable. The idea of the ghetto, you know, the Jews living behind the wall ghetto, it's often talked about as an anti-Semitic process. The actual fact is that the first so-called ghettos were created by Jews themselves. That's right. They did this because they didn't want their people infected by Gentiles. And, of course, Jews have had laws since the very beginning of Judaism and going all the way to the present time, especially the Orthodox Jew, where you don't share, you know, wine with a Gentile. If a Gentile touches your implements, your eating implements, then you can't eat from them. So there's a tremendous societal segregation. Now, again, this is not all Jews. There's a lot of Reform Jews out there. But the basic spirit of this idea of the chosen people of God being the Jews and the evil nature of Gentiles is something that's repeated again and again and again. And over the years, this has been reinforced by their breeding patterns. Those Jews who tended to go more toward Gentile values and just kind of like them more, like Gentile values of even beauty, whether it be in women or men, tended to marry out of the race. And the offspring of Jews and Gentiles were absolutely not accepted into the Jewish community. So what happened was that the Jews who were more like Gentiles in terms of their character, not being in with this, you know, this supremacist character, they were expelled from the Jewish community, and their genes were lost to the Jewish community, whereas those Jews who identified more with traditional Judaism stayed with the Jewish community. Now, this process is going on right today. It's happening as we speak. You know, people often talk about intermarriage and how it's a threat to the Jewish people. Well, in one way, it is a threat in terms of real numbers, but it doesn't take a huge amount of numbers to control societies. It's not really a numbers game. But you have to have a certain number of people to do it. But here's the situation. You probably have 10 or 20,000 people, 50,000 people, let's say, at the outside, who are at the critical junctures of our society, whether it be high government positions, high media powers, the media moguls, and so forth, that really have a tremendous influence on society. There are millions and millions of Jews, not only in the United States, but across the world. They can bring those numbers that they need to control. But what's going on is the intermarriage of Jews. That tends to be the Jews, again, who live in Gentile society and who tend to have more of a spirituality closer to Gentiles than the Jewish community. They have the same more Gentile standards of art, culture, literature, music, and even physical beauty and attractiveness. They have that. And now these people, when they marry out, that's it. They're not in the Jewish community anymore. In fact, the Jewish law, as you know, is that the descendant of a Jew who marries a Gentile, even if the Gentile converts to Judaism and the kids grow up as Jews, those kids are never fully accepted in Judaism. They can never become a priest in the Jewish faith. They can never become a Kohanim. They've got to be pure. So it's very interesting how this process goes. I'm going to go ahead and take some emails now. This is from Elect David Duke. Well, that's an interesting moniker, and that's from Michael there. He says, "Welcome, brother. The Honorable Representative of Louisiana, David Duke, also started my first true intellectual and soulful awakening. I believe you were drawn to him and admire him for the same reasons as I was. He has respectfully and selfishly fought for our rights for years." Well, thanks, Michael, but you don't need to say all that. But let's go. He's apparently answering an earlier question on Stormfront. But he says, "As far as your question for Representative Duke about backing up our information with sources, I'll try to answer that. I always hear Representative Duke back up almost everything with sources, and Representative Duke will always be happy to answer any questions as far as sources go. Just email him at info1@davidduke.com or ask your friends here, and we might be able to help you out. I must say, just in my opinion, never say anything that you believe that the person will ask you for your source if you don't have or remember it. There are some exceptions to that. Also, know your audience. Be prepared as far as what you will say for each person or group. If they already seem sympathetic to the cause, then you might be able to get away without sources at all times, but mainly, always have your sources to back up your claims. Even if they might call them bias sources. A bias source is better than this is what I say, or take my word for it. Also, if you if they call your source biased, you can count it that if they use a source and call it if they use a source and call it biased, but be ready to explain to them why their sources are biased. And generally in debates, you probably know how they argue against us with screwed up logic that you cannot debate, or just plain insults. Sometimes you have to use the same tactics, but only when the time is right. But we must try our best to be pleasant, respectful, never stoop to low level in our debates, and back up everything with sources the best we can. Representative David Duke's books are a great start, but Representative Duke awakens you, and you can continue your awakening doing research based off or inspired by him and his books. And he can give you that extra boost of inspiration every day with his broadcast, hope so, and also talking with your European-American friends here. So that's a good post, Michael, and that's so true. I think it's very important. We have a lot of people in the movement, even writers, who don't tend to back up their sources, and it's so important. Just give them some sort of reference. I mean, you don't have to go to a complete footnote if necessary, but tell them where it came from. If you mention a newspaper article about a certain issue, give the date and the page number and the name of the newspaper or the name of the magazine. That's very, very powerful. And as far as argument and debate is concerned, you know, the way you learn to do that is by doing it. And I was, as I talk about my awakening from the time I was 12, 13 years old, I debated these issues every day with my friends, family, teachers. And let me tell you, sometimes I got a little bloodied in those debates psychologically. And sometimes I was asked some questions and some points were made that I couldn't answer. And I saw and heard all the argument techniques. And he's right. A lot of debate is simply tricks. You know, well-timed insult or some sort of comical exaggeration, you know, can be very powerful in a debate against you, even though you have the logic on your side. You've seen the common techniques. You might say something like, the Jews control the media, and then they'll come back and say, oh, yeah, the Jews control all of the media, every writer, every director. You know, they take something that you say, and then they exaggerate that out of proportion and make it look silly. These are just common debating and rhetorical techniques. And what you've got to do is over the years and over time, you will learn to deal with those kinds of attacks and how to respond to them with your own humor, your own sarcasm. But again, going back to the basic issues, I often say that we have a real advantage in this cause because we have the truth on our side, and that is a tremendous weapon in debate. But the truth is not all that's necessary. It's also necessary to present that truth in a powerful way. Now, how do you do that? Well, first off, ladies and gentlemen, and this may sound silly to people, and I want people to support us no matter what they're like, whatever their personal life is. But if you're a person that wants to represent our people, you need to perform and you need to create an image. You need to create a self that reflects the ideals we talk about, which means you need to be absolutely clean, well presentable, decently dressed. And if you can, you know, if you're struggling with a little being overweight, you're struggling with being a little too skinny, you know, work on getting your body in shape and healthy. You know, everybody does not have perfect and wonderful features, you know, in terms of the way that we're cut in terms of our features. But everyone, you know, can develop a healthy and beautiful body. And if you do that and you show some stress, like if males can show some strength and if females keep themselves well-groomed and attractive and males can show strength and healthiness, you know, nice strong arms and back and shoulders and chest and, you know, and a healthy demeanor. I tell you, it goes a long, long way to giving people the right impressions when you get into that debate, that argument, or you give a speech or you run for office. It's really an important part of the process. It's not the only part of the process, but it's certainly something that you can consider, and I would urge all of our young activists to start developing a lifestyle now at a young age of keeping their body fit and healthy. And all of you who are getting a little bit older in life, and boy, it's harder and harder. I know how it is for me. As you're getting older in life, do the same thing. You know, work hard, and at that point, you've got to watch some of those carbs and some of those calories, and you've got to make a point to exercise more. All that weight will start sauntering down around your stomach and your thighs and your butt, you know, the whole bit. You want to keep healthy. And at the same time, and I'm not trying to overstress that, but I can tell you, when you can have a person who's got great ideas and express themselves wonderfully, but when he stands up and gets up there in debate and he looks like an absolute slob, you know. You can have the greatest intelligent white guy in the world. If he gets up, he's got big dreadlocks, you know, and he's, you know, it looks like something came out of a grunge rock exhibit. and the first time he stands up, I mean, it's just going to blow us out of the water with a lot of the people that you want to reach. So now, at the same time, in addition to that, and that's kind of the basics. You see, keeping your body, that is really a very, very minor part of your life. And it can, that's what's so amazing about it. It doesn't take much time. I work out, and I'm certainly no epitome of health and fitness. You know, I try to keep a modicum of fitness. I work out basically about 2 hours. I'd say I'd average about 2 hours a week. And some weeks I get no workouts in. But I try to work out 2 hours a week. Now, when I work out with resistance training and weights, and I work out very intensively. I go from one exercise to another. I use heavy weights, usually low reps, and I get maximum benefit from that working out. 2 hours a week, and the benefits to me are much greater than the time. I mean, that's, you know, first of all, that those 2 hours lessen the stress tremendously. Those 2 hours help your body to be stronger, your immune system to be stronger. Those 2 hours help you sleep better. Those 2 hours help you ward off, you know, disease or sickness, which makes you more productive. Those 2 hours will pay you back with many hours of greater productivity every week of your life. The bigger part, of course, but that's necessity. But, you know, like I say, you've got to get the necessities, the little things done before you get the big things done. You know, you've got to tie your shoes before you run that marathon. You know, if you can be training for 10 years to run marathons, but if your shoelaces aren't tied, my God, you might trip in the first 10 meters and break your knee and not be able to make the rest of the race. You know, and keeping your body fit and eating properly is just part of that basic process. And it's hard these days. We live in this Jewish commercial type of society, and we were bombarded by commercials on television and things and movies of eating all these rich and very bad foods for you. We get a hectic life, and sometimes you don't seem to fit in time to work out, and it's hard to do it, but you've got to do it. But that's the basics. That's just a small, that's like the time it takes to tie your shoes in terms of your overall life. The other part of your life is educating yourself so fully, you know, reading every book you can get your hands on this subject, really reading it and studying it and absorbing it, watching films and tapes. You know, that's one of the best ways. You know, we've got this conference video, which is produced now. We're just waiting for the shipment right now. It's been done. We're just waiting for it to come in. I've already got the master, the VHS completed. We're going to be offering those very shortly to all the people in the movement. And we've double layered these DVDs, which will play in any DVD player. We've double layered these DVDs, and which means we have 2.5 hours on each of the four DVDs available. 2.5 hours. Of DVD. You have the speeches of some of the finest leaders, most intelligent leaders and thinkers of our cause. You realize how much material you can learn from that, as well as being inspired and entertained by this fantastic DVDs. Those are the kind of things you should do. You could download speeches and debates, and you can learn processes of that. Jared Taylor is one of those great debaters in the race issue. You can listen to some of his debates on the race issue and learn from them, and you can adopt some of those policies and some of those ideas and answers. And eventually, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to develop an answer for every question that those friends or family or co-workers or whatever want to ask you. You're going to develop a complete answer to all of that, and you'll be a dynamo in terms of dealing with these questions. Messiah, which is an interesting screen name, says, I wonder if you or anyone has ever seen this document from the Chabad Lubavitchers. Chad Lubavitch has a mission embassy on Embassy Row in Washington, D.C. Well, he's talking about the document, but Messiah, it's another good example. I need you to give the source of the document itself, and not just a URL, but just give me the source. I can talk about it better. I have seen some of the documents where these Jewish supremacists openly talk really about dominating the world. It almost sounds like the protocols, and I'm one of these people that never talk about the protocols. I didn't have one mention of the protocols in my book. Why deal with something the Jews have so thoroughly, the Jewish supremacists have so thoroughly denounced and discredited, and parts of the protocols have been found to take it almost word from word by a prior book which was published, a fictional book published in France decades before the protocols were written. Now, that doesn't mean that the ideas in the protocol are somehow false, but the structure of the protocols, I think, was a device of the Tsar's security forces to try to explain Jewish supremacism to the average Russian in a form that they could understand. And later it was translated, put into the British Museum. And it's amazing how close the protocols are to what's transpired in the world. But why even get into that when the Jews can say, look, this has been totally discredited. We can prove this book has been plagiarized from another book, that it's not authentic. It couldn't have been the meetings of secret Jewish organization in Russia and so. Why give them that? You know, so I do my entire book, Jewish Supremacism, without any discussion of that. And I think, again, let's we have so many unimpeachable sources. Let's go with those sources. This is from Nordic. He says, Mr. Duke, I just came across the other day on television as I was surfing through the channels, the Jewish singer-songwriter Neil Diamond singing his song in praise of the immigrants flooding into the United States. They're coming to America today, etc. This song glorifies and celebrates the non-white immigration policy the Jews succeeded in establishing since 1965, even in entertaining mainstream citizens. Since Mr. Diamond is otherwise not particularly controversial, these Jews show their zeal in changing this country racially and rub our noses in it. I can hardly imagine many white Gentile musicians making immigration worship the name or the theme of a popular song. Perhaps this reveals how the Jews are so like-minded on this and may even suggest a conscious cooperation among them. Neil Diamond knows who's behind this policy and why. You can read the lyrics here, and you go to lyrics, and it's very easy. Just use America, Neil Diamond lyrics, and you can look that up at the Google search. Ordinary Americans should be annoyed with this song's theme, but they probably won't notice its real message. I remember when Ted Koppel and the media were very angry with the rock group's Guns N' Roses song that they sang about with the need for a sane immigration policy. That was one in a million. And by the way, of those who've not heard that song, if you do any file sharing or file downloading, that is an incredible song. One in a Million by Guns N' Roses. It's an amazing song, and it's an incredible song that was even published. This is from Riggs. He says, I'd like to get your opinion on the CFR. This is the last one for the day, ladies and gentlemen. We've gone over time as usual, but I will certainly be back with you tomorrow. David, I'd like to get your opinion on the CFR, Council of Foreign Relations. Many people refer to CFR as the New World Order. They seem to have a lot of influence on policymaking in the U.S. and in Europe. Many Zionists, including Christians and Jews, are involved. Henry Kissinger, Bill Clinton, George Bush are probably the most well-known members of the CFR. What are their goals? They seem to be in favor of elimination of all national borders. Their policies support non-white immigration to Europe and America. Meanwhile, Europe and America continue to decay. Our culture, standards of living, we're fighting wars that are not in our interests, and we're all now citizens of the world. Nationalism is taboo everywhere. What are their motivations? They also live in Europe and America. Why are they destroying their own nations? Well, again, this is one place I really part from some of the so-called conservative conspiratorial issues. Now, this is something like the John Birch Society promoted many, many years ago, and I think it really diverted America from the attention to the Jewish supremacists that it needed to be. Basically, they suggested that what was happening in the world, you know, this globalism and going toward the world government and all the rest of it, and the breaking down of trade barriers, breaking out of immigration barriers, was simply a conspiracy. It was just basically based on an idea of a few people who wanted to get together and rule the world for their own economic advantage. That's basically what they presented. The truth is, that's not true. Yes, there are people who have economic advantage by supporting the Jewish supremacist agenda. Absolutely. But that's not the core of this problem. They couldn't reach into every community the way they do, just on a few people getting together in an economic interest. And there'd be too many people who would betray their cause and expose their cause to the public and fight against their cause. The common denominator, the people and the driving force behind the CFR and behind the Bilderbergers and behind all these different groups are the Jewish supremacists. That is the core and the power behind it. And groups like the CFR or the Bilderbergers or these other international think tanks and policy organizations, they're simply the means, the weapons they use to enforce their policies. I'll give an example. The CFR and groups like that, all right, were very active in destroying, you know, the white South Africa, which is certainly not in the interest of most of the European people there in these groups, even the big economic forces that may have been in those groups in South Africa. But it was a policy of the Jewish supremacists. But at the same time they tried to destroy South Africa, apartheid South Africa, they supported apartheid Israel. Now that should tell you exactly what's going on and who's controlling that organization and why it's the way that it is. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is just about it for me, and I'm going to be with you again tomorrow. So if you have any more questions, just tune me in tomorrow on this internet, same internet location URL. Go to stormfront.org, town hall section, make a post, write me an email, info1@davidduke.com. And again, you can go to davidduke.com, and you can now order the DVD set for the conference, which we had, the 2005 conference. And the amazing price for this set is $65. Now each individual DVD, which is 2.5 hours, is regular $25 a piece. And we're discounting that to $19.95 as an initial offering of this DVD. And if you get the whole set together, that's $65 for the entire set of four DVDs. That's over 10 hours of the New Orleans conference. We're talking about Nick Griffin, we're talking about Mike Piper, we're talking about Jean-Michel Girard from France. We're talking about Lady Michelle Renouf, you know, the fine actress and fine writer, producer from Great Britain. And we even have an excerpt of one of her new video exposing Zionist Israel in that thing. We also have the full-length small short video of the National Front that Jay produced, which is high-tech. High-tech video of the new video they're doing about France. It's just incredible, and you see the third world France, which is becoming, and you see it kind of cleaned and refreshed by the National Front. You see a new France rising to the stars, rising to the skies. You know, with space shots going up. It's fantastic, and that's all contained in these videos. So right now the special price is $65, and for all four. And you can, and then we have another special offer if you want to have both the DVDs or VHS tapes. That's also available of the conferences, both the 2004 and 2005. You can do that for $100 for all eight VHS tapes or DVD videos. Unbelievable offer, initial offer, which is now available to you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's about it. I appreciate everything, and I will definitely be with you tomorrow. So we'll see you then. Thank you, and God bless, and take care.
This has been David Duke for our heritage and our freedom.